I'm Lillian Voskis with Lifestyles on KVCR. Thanks for listening. On today's show, I'll speak with Amy Harrison, co-founder of Operation Safe House, an organization that provides emergency shelter, intervention, and outreach services to our youth. Amy shares how the organization came about when she saw a need for a shelter in the Inland Empire. Then I'll speak with Cynthia Wright, executive director for the Fox Riverside Theater Foundation. Cynthia shares the history of the Fox Theater and how they're educating local students to support them in their pursuit of careers on stage and behind the scenes. Together, Operation Safe House and the Fox Riverside Theater Foundation are hosting an evening with Leslie Odom Jr. on December 19th. First up, it's my conversation with Operation Safe House. My guest is Amy Harrison. She is the co-founder and board president for Operation Safe House. It's nice to have the opportunity to speak with you. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Lillian. It's nice to be with you as well.
So I was not familiar with Operation Safe House, so I'm really excited to learn about it. Please share what Operation Safe House is and how it serves the teens in crisis.
I started it along with Dr. Susan Stark, who was the deputy superintendent of Riverside County Office of Education, 30 years ago. And actually, I had a child that we picked up for school in the morning. I had schools for emotionally disturbed children. And by the time we took the child home in the afternoon, the family moved and left the little boy. We were thinking, now what do we do? There's no shelter at all in Riverside County, never was. So the two of us decided we have got to start a shelter. I mean, the whole idea is to try and keep these kids off the streets. So we started a shelter. We got a two-bedroom, two-bath, run-down, dilapidated house that bordered Juvenile Hall in Riverside, and they gave us the house and said, you have 6 months to pull this off, and if you can do it, we don't think you ever will.
Wow.
Well, we pulled it off, and so it actually opened in 1990. Now, today, it's a 17-bed shelter. We also have a 22-bed shelter in the desert that we built. We have transitional living apartment buildings for kids, because it's interesting that when kids turn 17 and 18, they miraculously don't know how to all of a sudden take care of themselves. So we have transitional living apartment buildings that they can live in, and we teach them skills. They go to school or they have to get a job, and we have drug intervention programs, therapy, counseling, and we also, sadly enough, handle the trafficked children, the kids that are sort of bought and sold and brought over the borders. And so it's kind of ballooned into whatever the county has needed. Mostly it provides safety and shelter and therapy and support for children who live in the streets, who are homeless or are throwaways, can't go home, can't be with their parents for whatever's happening in the house, and we try and reunify them with their families. And all of it is at no cost to the parent. It's not a fee for service. You walk to the front door and we will take care of you and give you food and warmth and clothing, and it's all operated by grants and donations, 100%.
Do you only serve the Riverside County just residents? I don't know how to describe that. Residents
right.
in Riverside County or...
Well, you know, honestly, Lily, no. If anybody came to our door, we're sort of the gateway to Hollywood. Kids have this idea in their mind that if they can just get to Hollywood, they'll be discovered and they'll be fine. And they've run away from home for either being sexually abused or physically abused. We've had kids from Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado. I mean, we have them from all over. And if law enforcement picks up a child or a young person in the streets, they have no place to take them, so
right.
it's us. You know, it's not where the kid comes from, it's what the kid needs. So it's not just for Riverside County, although if we can reunify them with a family here, that would be great. We oftentimes, we have an agreement with bus service like Greyhound, and that if a kid is out of state, they will transport the child back to their state home, because by that time we'll have done some reunification therapy. So it really doesn't matter where the kids are from. If they're presented at our front door, we take care of them.
So explain to me maybe the intake process and where they go from there.
See, you'd be surprised how many of these kids you actually see when you drive around town. You know, they sleep in the freeway underpasses because they're protected. They tell us that they sleep on top of 7-Eleven or Circle K's because they're flat roofs. They know that 7-Eleven has to change out all of their disposable food every 7 days. So they eat out of the dumpsters there. They sleep on the roof where there's a reverse heat pump system so that they can kind of stay warm when it's cold. And the idea when they come to us is to locate the family, try and find out what the issue is, have the family come in. Therapy is free. Family intervention is free. We have on-site licensed therapists. And the kids can stay, up to 3 weeks. And if they can't be reunified, if the damage is so extreme that they can't go back home, then we try and find alternative support systems for them. Like I say, if they're 16 or 17 or 18, they can go into one of our transitional apartment complexes. And there are two kids to an apartment, and they have to either go to school or get a job and put money in a savings account, and we try and teach them a skill. But the idea really is to have them be able to go back, and sometimes just the break in the yelling and the drama that's going on at home helps, and then the parents are receptive, and so is the child. Child doesn't want to be in safe house. I mean, even though it's a safe place and it's nurturing and we have very supportive staff, every child's preference is to be home and to be loved. You know, we're not the panacea. We're the intervention to trying to get back to something that works in their home.
My guest is Amy Harrison. She is the co-founder and board president for Operation Safe House. Amy, do you find that when they go back home, things are better, things haven't changed, or they don't go back home if things haven't changed? Do you ever get repeats that come back?
Oh, absolutely. You just covered all the bases. You should come work with us. the problems don't magically go away.
Sure.
It's because they didn't magically appear. They appeared over time. As long as the parents are willing to keep coming with the child after we send them home to counseling, we keep the counseling going on as long as it seems to be working. Sometimes the kids will leave again or run away because they're afraid or scared.
Sure.
Or parents kick them out. So they'll come back to us. Same with the traffic kids. When the traffic kids, they're told they have to go work the truck stop by the people who trafficked them over here, they'll still come back to the safe house. They know where they're safe. That's not where they want to be. This is not a life solution for them. We have a number of kids that come back. Hopefully each time they come back, it's for a lesser and lesser time, and the parents are more receptive at counseling. And by that time, we know the kids and we know the family. So it's much easier to get to a solution and have the parents be more involved in their counseling.
And are students ever, or youth ever turned away? I mean,
Never.
You may not have the beds available.
Well, honestly, Lillian, we're a 17-bed shelter here and 22 in the desert.
Right.
But if we have 40 kids, we'll figure it out. I mean, we have extra beds. We have cots. We're never going to put a kid out on the streets again because that's where they're not safe. If they can't get off the streets in the first 24 or 48 hours, in the next 48 hours, they will either be doing drugs or they'll be hooking.
Oh,
and that's by about 80%. The key is to get them off the street, keep them out from under the freeway underpasses. When you drive down the street now, you'll probably have a little different awareness of seeing kids that don't look like they're happy, that are not well clothed, and carrying their blankets with them. You know, they don't want to be there, and especially if they're 12 and 13 years old. My God, that's pretty frightening.
And of course it is. How did the youth find you? You mentioned that the law enforcement could pick them up, and they already know about you. But if that's not the case, how else would they find you?
Boy, you asked the great questions. We have also a component to Safe House. It's called Project Safe Place. And you will see a triangular hazard sign with a child's head with arms around them. You will see these. You don't realize you see them, but they're all over the county. They're on RTA buses. They're in fire stations. They're in the libraries. They're in 7-Eleven windows. Every time you see that logo, that means that somebody in that agency knows how to get a child to Safe House.
Oh.
And they are trained. We have training for those people so that a child knows if they see that logo there, they can go in. And they're told this in schools. We do a huge outreach program in all the schools. We have staff that just go into the schools and work with the teachers and the counselors and the kids. We have wallet cards that kids can keep in their wallet that we hand out at the schools so that if they ever are on the street or ever need help, they know they can pull out that wallet. There's a number on it, or they can go into a library or a gas station where that logo is and someone will get them to Safe House. Somebody will know. They can get on an RTA bus free, and that bus driver knows that this child needs to get to Safe House.
Why the 7-Eleven? Did you say the decals would be at 7-Eleven? Is that something you've worked out with the 7-Elevens in Riverside County?
Yes. I mean, now, not all of them, because some of them are independently owned.
Sure.
The 7-Elevens are where kids know they can go because the roofs are flat on top of 7-Eleven, so they climb up there. We go to wherever we think kids are going to hang out. And of course, kids are more susceptible to needing help when it's cold outside. We go where they are, and they tell us where they are. To be honest with you, Lillian, it's word of mouth. Kids will tell other kids where they can go. And we have another program that's our app program, APP, where kids can call, because, you know, they all do social media, but they can call this number free of charge, and there's around-the-clock, 24/7, a licensed therapist that they can talk to anonymously. So if they're suicidal or thinking of hurting themselves or something, they can get support right there. Or if a young person knows that they have a friend that's suicidal, they can all call the app. We get sometimes, oh my God, hundreds of calls a month on the app where kids call in and just need to talk. And there's a licensed person there that will talk with them and try and work it out. It's all anonymous. They don't have to give their name. We won't go after them. We've had kids from Colorado call. We had a suicidal young man in Colorado call, and through talking to this therapist, several times the therapist was able to figure out what school the kid was in, contacted the principal. The principal knew exactly who the kid was and immediately got the kid help because he was suicidal.
I want to circle back to the beginning of our conversation when you said it was the one kid that the parents
what
had left.
Do with,
I don't know how a family leaves, but what happened to that child?
Well, we did what our insurance company hates us to do. We had a staff member take that child home. And keep the child safe, because again, there was no place to take that child. And when there was no extended family locally or anybody that we can find, an aunt, an uncle, a brother, a, you know, cousin, if there's no extended family, then we end up calling Department of Social Services, Child Protective Services. We either become a foster placement or find through CPS a foster home that will take that child in and keep the child safe.
Okay. So looking forward, what are your goals for the future? To be out of business?
You know, your mouth to God's ears. I don't know. Wouldn't that be nice? You know, and I hope God's listening, because if she is, we got a chance. That would be great. That's never going to happen, sadly enough. You know, I've been doing this business and working with at-risk children for 30 years, and every time I think I've seen it all, I haven't. It's getting worse and worse, and kids with the bullying and with the social media and the threats and the drugs, it doesn't get better. And, you know, the sad part is parents are want to be good parents for the most part, and they're commuting hours in the morning and the evening to work, and they don't get home in time, and kids don't sit down with families and have dinner anymore, and kids are left unsupervised to their own resources, and that's not going to change. I would love if there were a number more safe houses. I would love if it wasn't just Riverside County. Mm-hmm. Annex our expanded outreach that we do. I'd love if there were more places like us.
Wow.
But there aren't, because they're expensive. I would love to say we'd be out of business someday, but I suspect that's never going to happen.
My guest is Amy Harrison. She is the co-founder and board president for Operation Safe House. You were describing how you're funded. How many staff do you have that I assume aren't volunteers? They are paid, so you're covering those costs as well?
That is correct. You know, when we do a fundraiser, interestingly enough, we have a large fundraiser every year out in the desert, for example, and it's called the WOW Luncheon, which is the Wonder of Women. We have three women doctors out there that help us put that on. It's a great fundraiser, and we raise anywhere between $125,000, $150,000.
Nice.
That only covers one payroll.
Right.
We have two payrolls a month. So when we say, gosh, what a great, successful fundraiser that is, and don't get me wrong, Lillian, it is.
Of course.
But with two payrolls a month, that covers one payroll. With two shelters, round-the-clock staff, and obviously you have to have minimum of two or three staff on at a time. You can't have girls in the shelter with male staff. You can't have boys in the shelter with female staff. You always have to be staffed, whether a child's in that bed or not, because you never know when they're going to come in the front door. Same thing with our transitional living apartments. You know, there's staff round the clock there. That's why there are not a lot of shelters out there, because it's an expensive venture, and it's taken us 30 years. I'm very lucky that the first two people that I hired 30 years ago are still with us.
Wow, that's passion.
It absolutely is. It's a very, very expensive and difficult methodology to be able to operate a shelter because we don't get government funding. We don't get pay for service, in other words.
Right.
You know, like a lot of group homes do. When probation department or social services places a kid in a group home, they pay that group home provider an amount of money every month, and it's very expensive.
But
it's sometimes $10,000 a month.
Sometimes when you bring in the government money, you have to do other things in order to do it. So it's a trade-off sometimes, I would guess. I don't know.
Well, you're exactly right. And California is so heavily regulated. You know, we're licensed as a group home, though we don't have to be as a shelter. But, you know, licensed group homes that get ASDC money, which is aid to families with dependent children, and they get literally like $10,000 a month per child.
Right. Wouldn't that be helpful?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding? I would have a whole lot less gray hair.
So you do have a fundraiser coming up. You've partnered with the Fox Riverside Theater Foundation.
Correct.
And how will that benefit your organization?
Well, the great part about this is so many people came together, which is so gratifying. I was able to arrange, through the graciousness of this performer's heart, Leslie Odom Jr., who won the Tony Award for Best Actor for Hamilton on Broadway.
Right.
He's quite a talent, and he agreed to come here. 4 days before he comes here, he's opening his new show at the Kennedy Center.
Oh.
And then 4 days later, he's bringing his show to the Fox. The goal is to raise all of the expenses that we need to put on the show, and then as a result, have all the ticket sales be split between Safe House and the Children of the Performing Arts at the Fox.
Well, I hope it's a successful evening. I'm sure it'll be a great performance, but I hope it does what it's intended to do and raise money for these youth.
Well, I hope so too, Lily, and I expect to see you there.
Okay. Thanks very much for your time. It's been great speaking with you. I hope we meet sometime in person.
I look forward to it.
To learn more about Operation Safe House, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on Today's Show. After a quick break, I'll speak with Cynthia Wright of the Fox Riverside Theater Foundation about their upcoming benefit concert that will support both the children of Operation Safe House and the Fox Foundation. You're listening to Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. If you're just joining us, my guest now is Cynthia Wright, Executive Director for the Fox Riverside Theater Foundation. So great to have you here with us, Cynthia. I'm so excited to learn about what you do there at the foundation.
Thank you. It's my privilege to be here.
Share a little bit about the history of the Fox Theater when its doors opened in 1929.
The theater did open in 1929 as a movie theater, and some people don't realize that vaudeville entertainment was actually still occurring at that time, so there was a little bit of that going on as well. And its most famous moment came, from our perspective, its most famous moment came in 1939, when Gone with the Wind was shown as a sneak preview for the very first time on Earth at the Fox in Riverside. In the 40s, the military actually used the building as a temporary barracks because all the military establishments were so full during World War II that they needed extra space. And so we have photos of soldiers sleeping in the seats, on the floors, even on the stairs.
I didn't realize that it had been used in other capacities. I did remember hearing about Gone with the Wind premiering there, and that is a big claim to fame, I think, for that particular venue. Talk to me about how we got to where we are today.
Well, as the years went by, the theater changed hands several times, and it did not belong to William Fox very long. It passed through other hands, other companies. And then toward the end of the 20th century, of course, the multiplexes became very, very popular,
right,
and single theaters did not do very well. And so most of them began to deteriorate, and that physically was really obvious. By the time that 2000 rolled around, the theater was in shambles almost, but the bones were still great. So after 2000, the city of Riverside bought it and restored it and turned it into a performing arts center, and it reopened as that performing arts center in 2010, and that is how it still exists today, with Live Nation doing the operation of it, with the city owning the property, and with the foundation doing promotion through education, outreach, and fundraising to make that theater, because it belongs to all of us. It was paid for with taxpayer dollars to make that accessible to everyone.
Okay, so then that's where the foundation comes in. And share what the mission is or some of the projects that you're in charge of or working towards to make it a educational component.
Because of the outreach and education components of our mission, we do several things to bring especially kids into the theater. So we have a program called Students at the Fox, where we reach out into the schools and also to nonprofits that work with youth clientele and bring their kids in to see Broadway shows, sometimes other types of shows as well, but mostly Broadway.
Nice.
And that has been extremely successful. It's been growing every year, and those tickets are in high demand. So we have to do some fundraising to try and supplement that because the need is so great. Really hate to turn anyone away. We also have a Seniors at the Fox program, so we work with community centers locally to bring groups of seniors into those Broadway shows as well. And then there's another educational component that we've been able to do in partnership with American Theater Guild, which operates the Broadway program at the Fox. We've often been able to do master classes. So let's say we have a show on a Tuesday night and a Wednesday night. On that Wednesday morning between the shows, we'll bring some of the cast members or crew members, if it's more appropriate, to do a master class for some students. So we've had things like one of the primary dancers from Chicago teaching a group of young dancers to do the iconic All That Jazz number.
Oh.
Or we've had the dancer from Dirty Dancing that taught a group of high school students to do the closing number from that show. We had four cast members from Kinky Boots that went into a high school and worked with students from several high schools. Several of the students were chosen to do a mock audition, and they would audition for the group, listen to the critique, and then they went back and did it again.
Nice.
And the change after they listened to what those cast members had to say was fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome.
And watching those things, I wish everyone could see it.
That's a great experience for them. And then also for the teachers or the professionals to see that their words made a difference, that the students listened and made the change and it improved immediately or right away. So that's wonderful. Those are just some of the things. Now, do you buy the tickets? Is that one of the things that you raise money for so that you can buy the tickets for the seniors and the kids? Those aren't donated to you.
That is correct.
Okay.
The people who belong to our Encore Society and to some of our other giving programs actually provide the money so that we can buy those tickets. We do get them at a discount rate, so we can get a lot for our money, but it still does cost money, and so we are always raising money to try and increase that program because the demand grows every year.
Absolutely. Now, do you have any examples of maybe some students that have maybe gone or sent you a note of, you know, that's my first time in the theater, I'd never been in the theater. Do you have any stories that you could share that maybe that's happened?
We have done surveys, and we've received a number of responses of that nature where the students are saying, this is my first time ever. I had no idea what it's like to watch people perform live. But probably the best story, and one that's very recent, we also have a program called Live Tech, which is a theater technology program where we bring students in from the schools and they are able to learn lights, audio, and staging from the Live Nation professionals at the Fox. We just had our first Live Tech student who took a job at the Fox, and she's currently working with the Live Nation crew there backstage.
Oh, that's awesome. Therefore, it is making a difference. Right there is at least one example of how it did make a difference by the work that you're doing and the volunteers. And I want to ask about that. How, if one is listening, would someone volunteer? Let's say they love the theater. I love the theater. As a little girl, I used to volunteer after I did the ushering. I could stay and watch a show. And that was at the California Theater, which is a theater I grew up in. But how would someone volunteer, get involved to work with your organization? Is that a possibility?
Yes. The best way is to contact us at the foundation. It actually is a process because it is a city building.
Sure.
They need to go through the City of Riverside volunteer application process.
Okay.
And so that is how we acquire our volunteers.
Oh, very good. Well, I know firsthand from KVCR that for any nonprofit, volunteers are always the lifeblood to keep things going sometimes.
Because, yes, they are.
Yeah, nonprofits don't always have the budget to do so. Speaking of budget, I know you have an event coming up.
We are so excited. We are doing a fundraising concert in partnership with Operation Safe House. The two nonprofits are bringing Leslie Odom Jr. to do a show at the Fox. Leslie Odom Jr. Played Aaron Burr on Broadway in Hamilton.
Did you hear the news about good old General Mercer?
No.
You know Claremont Street?
Yeah.
They renamed it after him. The Mercer legacy is secure.
Sure.
And all he had to do was die.
Yeah, that's a lot less work.
We ought to give it a try. Now, how you going to get your debt plan through?
And he won the Tony Award for that. He also has a new album out. And he is going to be appearing in the movie Harriet, the Harriet Tubman story.
Great. And for those that are interested, do they still go to the Fox Live Nation to get tickets, or do they go somewhere else?
Yes, riversidelive.com has the tickets.
And explain the kind of music, what the show will be. You said he has a new CD. What will the concert be?
His new album is Jazz in Nature.
Such a joy to have you in my life. One touch from you feels just like paradise. Through ups and downs, you made the sacrifice for that day.
But he also does some Broadway things, and I believe he'll do some holiday music because it is December 19th.
Perfect. Well, I hope the event is a success, and because the more money raised, the more children you can serve in the theater.
Thank you so much, and we actually have the opportunity to serve the kids that day as well, because he is allowing us to invite school groups to the sound check in the afternoon. So it actually does have an outreach component. The tagline of our event is for the kids who dream and the kids who will learn to dream again.
Well, thanks so much for being a guest. I appreciate your time and learning more about the Fox Theater Foundation. And it's a lovely theater, so hopefully it'll get used this December.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And we just hope to see lots of people from the Inland Empire at the theater on December 19th.
To learn more about the Fox Riverside Theater Foundation, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on Today's Show. That's our show for this week. To hear any of our past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. You can also listen to Lifestyles on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play Music. Search for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez on your streaming service and take the show on the go. Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including Sharita Wadd, David Fleming, Sean Houlihan, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Our theme music is provided by Ethan Bortnick. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now.